It's All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. By now, you've probably heard the news that Andrew Jackson is losing his place on the $20 bill to be succeeded by Harriet Tubman. But don't cry any tears for Old Hickory. He distrusted and railed against paper money and probably wouldn't be thrilled that his face graces the bills in your wallet. For some context on all this, we turn to Dan Feller. He's the director and editor of the Jackson Papers Project at the University of Tennessee.
Oh, boy. First, because I am an Andrew Jackson scholar, people have expected me to have a reaction, and they have expected me to be outraged. I'm not, to put it bluntly. I'm interested, but I'm not outraged. There is a difference between studying Andrew Jackson and being convinced, as I am, that Andrew Jackson was a centrally important figure in 19th century American history. There's a difference between that and deciding that he was a good guy. There's a difference between knowing, understanding, comprehending American history and deciding what in it we want to pick out to honor or celebrate or condemn. So I'm trying to stand a little bit back from this. I think a lot of people seem eager to either proclaim this as the triumph of truth and justice, finally at last, or else the end of the moral world. And I don't see it, frankly, as either one.
It demonstrates something, Professor Feller, that you and I have talked about actually in several of our previous conversations, which is that more than a century and a half after the guy died, he is still a divisive figure. He's still a polarizing figure. And some of those opinions have reflected that. But another thing you and I have talked about is who claims Andrew Jackson. There are libertarians, there are conservatives, there are liberals who all find some part of his legacy to say, well, you know, he did this, you know, and that's something we can talk about. And one of the editorials I saw yesterday was very interesting. It was headlined, Andrew Jackson didn't want to be on the 20 anyway. And the writer's point was that these notes that we use, the currency notes, paper money that we use, are issued by a central bank. It represents a centralized financial system in the United States, so a single currency, which Andrew Jackson, the story goes, always railed against. So he probably didn't want to be on the 20. Let's talk a little bit maybe about how Old Hickory might have felt about all this.
Well, I'm not sure how we would have felt that. As historians, we always feel like saying the past does not repeat itself. There are interweaving lines of descent from the past to the present, but they're not parallel lines. They're not straight lines. And so it's very difficult to say what Andrew Jackson would have said about all this. It is true that Jackson was an opponent of paper money, which he did not regard as real money, and that he thought that paper money was an instrument in the hands of the banker class to somehow cheat the rest of us. Looking at his views on banking and the economy, we really have to look at two things. Jackson was, today we would say, an economic primitivist. He was somebody who believed that real money was gold and silver. And today economists would say that it's a social convention. Even at his time, many people said Jackson's economic views were simply primitive. His political objection to the banking system was perhaps much more sophisticated. What Jackson objected to and objected to in ringing terms in his bank veto was the intertwining of banking interests and larger corporate interests with government to the point where the two became inseparable. To the point where decisions that would affect the rest of us, not only affect us economically, but affect our and constrict our ability to decide how to run our own lives, would be made by essentially bankers. And I would say, in light of what's happened in the last 10 years or so, that's still a very contemporary concern.
It is an issue that is still discussed. I mean, campaign trail today, the Occupy Wall Street protests, a lot of the discussions that happened in the wake of the Great Recession showing that issue is definitely still around, even if we may be talking about it in different terms and certainly different personalities being involved. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, though, was you looked into this, and I find this very interesting. We think of our paper money figures as being permanent. And I remember there were some mild concern back when the Treasury Department first started redesigning the bills several years ago and adding colors and patterns and things, and enlarging the photographs and things like that. And people were thinking, well, they're changing our money. You've looked into this, and actually in other countries, that's not unusual. It's the U.S. is sort of aberrant in the idea that it's paper money, this philosophy that it should be unchanging in terms of its physical appearance.
Yeah. Certain things, two things really, have been true for so long that many of us have, at least have gotten so habituated to them that we think they have to be true and it's the end of the world if you change them. One of them is even the appearance of the bills, but beyond that, the faces that are on the bills. We've had Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Hamilton, Jackson on the 1 through the 20 since well before I was born. The last time any of those faces were changed was more than 80 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
The thing is that they were changed before that.
Right.
But we've now gotten used to the idea that they're enshrined there. They have to be there. They're like statues on Mount Rushmore.
Right.
And the other thing is, of course, they're all statesmen. And that has been, down to this point, utterly taken for granted. When you are used to thinking of it that way, then making any change in any bill looks like a personal dethronement. It looks like a personal attack.
Right.
We're banishing Andrew Jackson and we're putting Harriet Tubman in his place. And that's going to create controversy. I try to take a wider look at it and say, well, instead of being a personal dethronement, an I win, you lose, this could be the beginning of a great adventure. It's not written in the Ten Commandments
mm-hmm.
that the currency can't change. It's not written that the faces on it have to be either statesmen or even politically symbolic figures. And the comparison you mentioned is British currency. And I did a little Wikipedia research this morning to reinforce what I noticed when I was last in Britain. First, they change the faces on British currency quite frequently. There have been altogether 20 or more faces on British currency, and this is only on 4 bills over the last 40 years when there have been no changes in American currency.
Mm-hmm.
And they put artists and educators, composers and social reformers and scientists and engineers and inventors on their currency. They've had everybody from William Shakespeare to Jane Austen to Charles Darwin on their currency. And there's no reason we can't do that if we don't want to. And maybe that would make it more interesting. And maybe it would spare us the battle that's inevitable when you start out with the presumption that the five faces on the currency have to be the five people we honor most. For that matter, take faces off altogether. Why not put Niagara Falls or the Statue of Liberty or the Grand Canyon or the Golden Gate Bridge or Bridal Veil Falls? There's all sorts of things you could do on the currency.
I am not sure that when you started studying Andrew Jackson, you thought that he would be in such high demand in the year 2015, 2016, and probably going forward as well. But as always, we appreciate you coming in whenever he is in the news to give us some background on this fascinating man and his legacy that continues. Dr. Dan Feller, the director and editor of the Jackson Papers Project here at the University of Tennessee, thanks as always for being with us today.
Thank you, as always, for having me.